Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. And all right, scientists, don't be shy. Professional scientists, citizen scientists, anybody working with scientists. We had somebody calling up a minute ago who didn't want to wait, saying that he was in private equity but working on a biomed product. So you can call us up too if you're in that kind of relationship with a scientist. 212-433-WNYC. Your own quick takes on the frontiers of science. From your own laboratory, your own office, your own greenhouse, or whatever it is. 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. And Pete in Princeton, you're on the air. Pete, thanks for calling up.
Hey, Brian, thanks for taking my call.
What you working on?
I'm working on something called the Bee Home. It's a modular shelter system, sort of in the shape of a hexagon, very similar to the honeycomb pattern. It's basically taking that shape and creating safe, warm, comfortable spaces that people can stand up in and have a small room to themselves, where there'll be shared facilities, bathrooms, and so forth.
And is this meant to be
sort of like,
a small dwelling for human beings that's energy efficient? Is that the idea?
Yeah, the energy efficient and material efficient. The bees and wasps have been at it for a minute, and I think they kind of figured out some things as far as what shapes are most efficient, and I think the hexagon is a very, very efficient way to enclose space. So I'm taking these things and making individual units that can be stacked and create a community, and then there would be shared facilities such as bathrooms and whatnot, but it's just a place to have for your own. So it's originally intended for emergency relief systems, but I see it also for building communities as well.
Right, fascinating. Then you have to get the real estate developers involved, right?
I don't know about that.
Pete, thank you for calling up. I appreciate it. Daniel in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. What you working on?
The work was on deafferentation, which is removing the sensations from the limbs and seeing of monkeys and seeing what capacity their hands have. And I want to remind you of the case of that Taub who was pilloried by PETA and then by NIH and so on. And his career was destroyed. But he has subsequently shown by working in Europe that people with long-term stroke can be rehabilitated despite the many years of paralysis. And that's in great contrast to research today, where since Reagan, you have been allowed to turn your research into a patent, even though you did your research on federal grants. And so now the public is paying twice for a product, once when it's being developed and the second time when they buy it. And there's a very interesting article in Scientific American by a professor of journalism from NYU who got all the FIOs necessary and has proven the tremendous role of money in NIH, in research and so on. It really corrupted science to make it for profit.
Daniel, thank you. Linda in Warwick, you're on WNYC. Hi, Linda. What you working on?
Hi. I'm working on for a website called Butterflies and Moths of North America, and I'm tracking all the butterflies and moths that I see in my yard. And what I'm doing is taking photographs of them and posting them on a website they have, which scientists then use to track. They want to know things like whether or not these species exist still, how many are there, whether they're migrating, whether they're showing up or not. Last year, I tracked one that was in the northernmost part of its range and actually shouldn't have been there. So it was pretty interesting. It's interesting for them, the biologists who are looking at it.
Linda in Warwick, citizen scientist at work, huh?
I just want to encourage all your listeners to do it. There are many things like this. The Xerxes Society has a bee tracking project. The Audubon Society has bird counts. I think people know that. The DEC has a frog tracking project because we know that amphibians are on the decline and people have to know where there are pockets of them, et cetera. And all these things are things we can do.
Right in our own front yards, in your case. Linda, thank you so much. Agnes in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hi, Agnes.
Hi, Hi, Brian. Thank you for taking my call. I really appreciate your show always. I'm a theoretical physicist, and I'm calling in because the previous person you interviewed about black holes mentioned the Large Hadron Collider, and I want to tell the people of New York and everybody else who's listening that here in New York, on Long Island, we have Brookhaven National Laboratory, where what we are doing is recreating the matter that was 1/1,000,000th of a second after the Big Bang. And we do this amazing stuff right here in terrestrial laboratories. And what we learned is actually that this matter is the most perfect liquid that we know of. So it flows almost without viscosity. And so this is amazing stuff happening in our backyard. And I thought this is the research I'm working on myself. So I thought of sharing this.
And when you have a liquid like that that flows so freely, almost without viscosity, as you say, what, how can we gain from that? And is it beyond theoretical?
This is actually what we learned from it, is that how this matter, primordial matter, was expanding and then coagulated to form the first atoms and particles as we know it. And it is theoretical, but we are creating this matter in the laboratory. What we can gain from it as for humanity is a lot of offspring for nuclear medicine and other kind of, in the top of my head. But this is in the development of these accelerators. We are learning a lot and developing new materials and new processes for medical research, for instance. This
yes.
is just one.
One example. Agnes, thank you so much for sharing that with us. Good luck with that work. And Paul in White Plains, you're on WNYC. Hi, Paul.
Sure. How you doing?
Okay.
Thanks so much for taking my call.
What
yeah,
you working on?
I'm currently working on robotic and service systems, which as a hobby. I have my own shop, so to set up as an engineering laboratory in which I play with microcontrollers and so on. But my question actually has to do with the fellow who talked about the black holes and the big question associated with whether or not information is lost through the black holes. One of the things that never gets mentioned in the popularization of these things is that time is integrally tied into how black holes are structured. In other words, I often posit this to my students. I said, I could commit the perfect murder by taking you and taking my enemy and throwing him into a black hole. See, I can't be tried for murder because by the time he actually crosses the threshold, nearly an infinite amount of time has passed, namely the end of the universe has passed. From the perspective of my enemy, of course, he'll pass right through the event horizon and maybe get hit and destroyed. But he'll see the universe pass before his eyes. It'll be the end of the universe before it actually takes place. So it's kind of an interesting conundrum in the sense that if there's a firewall inside the event horizon, it may be a moot point because you will never actually reach it from the reference frame of somebody sitting outside. It's something that they never seem to discuss. It's just sort of an interesting puzzle.
Is there any practical application of it?
The practical application for understanding black holes really is largely an intellectual one, namely, where did the universe come from and where did it go? Another way of looking at it is that the universe and the grandest structure of things, when we look out at the cosmic background radiation and we try to discern what the pattern of the Big Bang was, that all of that pattern comes as a result of this little understanding the microscopic subatomic framework of the interactions that take place that your previous caller talked about, and Brookhaven National Lab being one of the greatest places to investigate this sort of thing.
Paul, thank you so much. And our final word is going to go to Aaron in Bergen County. All right, Aaron, I see you're on Theoretical Physics, too. Whatever you can do in 30 seconds, it's your platform.
Yeah, hi, Brian. I'm not an astrophysicist. I'm an engineer by profession. I have a friend in Israel who is a relativistic theory expert, published quite a bit, including in handbooks of physics and so on. He formulated a paper which he actually published, but nobody has any interest in it. And he's showing and providing the mathematical underlines and a proof for the fact that, in his opinion, the expansion of the universe, which is now accepted as a fact,
And I'm sorry to say we are not going to reach the limits of the universe before we reach the limits of our time. Thanks for all your calls.